Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
Hello.
Hi, Bob. Gloria Martin here.
Hi, Gloria. How are you?
I'm very well, and how are you today?
Fine.
Good. How's your weather there in sunny California?
It's beautiful. I always say, what's it like in Toronto?
Well, you know, actually, surprisingly mild and raining, not snowing.
Yeah, apparently the whole East Coast is kind of like mild.
Yeah.
We're
all happy.
Usually, it's kind of sadistic, but, sometimes if I'm this time of year talking in Toronto and it's 5 below 0 and a blizzard, and they'll ask me how's the weather in L.A., I say, well, we have a cold snap. You know, I don't think we're going to even get into the 70s today, you know.
You're mean. You're cruel.
Yeah, you're right.
I have to say a big hello to you from Art Garfunkel, who I just got off the phone with.
Oh, gee, yeah. Oh, yeah. Catch 22, yeah.
Yeah, Catch 22. Yeah, he said you guys had quite a time making that movie.
Oh, yeah, we had a great... They should have filmed the making of the movie, which really, I think, would have done better than Catch 22. But I remember one thing with Art. He had to get back to New York, and Mike Nichols is directing. So he went to Mike and he said, after the scene, he said, I don't have a scene for like 10 days, you know. And he said, because I was thinking about going back to New York. And Mike said, well, okay, this is the weekend, so we'll send the film back to Hollywood, because we're shooting in Guaymas, Mexico. And he said, then, of course, they'll print it, and then they'll look at it, and then there'll be Tuesday, then they'll send it back here Wednesday, and I may try to look at it Thursday, but I probably won't get the chance until Friday. So you better figure a good 10 days. And so I said, oh, okay, oh, thank you. And so he went back to the hotel, and he called for the Mexican cab company, and it pulled up, and he said, Tucson, which is about 200 miles away. So he took the cab to Tucson, and they flew into New York.
That's wild. Oh, my God. Now, was that your first film role?
No, the first one would have been Hell is for Heroes.
Oh, yes.
With Steve McQueen and Bobby Darin and Fess Parker.
Oh, my God, Steve McQueen.
And then I did Hot Millions with Peter Ustinov and Maggie Smith and Carl Malden in London.
Wow.
And then I think Catch 22.
Wow. So you've worked with some of the greats, eh?
Boy, yeah. You know, looking back, my wife and I went out to dinner last night, and we were talking about some of the giants that we knew. I mean, and she remembered something I had forgotten about. We were driving with the Rickles Chasen's. Very famous, Hollywood restaurant. And,
right.
And we pulled up to a stoplight, and next to us was Fred Astaire and Robin, his wife, the jockey. And he was in the, he was driving his Rolls Royce, and he rolled down the window, and he said, hey, Bob, where are you going? I said, we're going to Chasen's. He said, they pad their bills, and he drove off. And that was Fred Astaire,
That's funny.
So, I mean, we got in toward the tail end of it, but boy, and then Judy Garland and Dean and Frank and, when we think of the giants that we knew, we were on a first-name basis with Jack Benny, George Burns.
Wow. It was such an era for talent.
Boy, yeah. We took it for granted. We didn't realize, and it was the old Vegas. Before the huge skyscrapers went up.
Yeah, the real Vegas.
Yeah, it was just great. It was just such a great. I remember Freddie DeCordova, who produced his claim to fame was Bedtime for Bonzo with Ronald Reagan. And he was executive producer of The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And he worked with Jack Benny a lot and George Burns. And I remember he did a program called Legend to Legend. And he would have what he called a legend, which was me in my case in comedy. And so I came out and accepted the award, and then I named my legend, who was Jack Benny, or who was George Burns. And so then I bring George out, and George was very frail at that time, you know, and presented him, you know, we showed clips of his career, and then I presented him with whatever award it was. I don't remember what it was.
Right, right.
Now, so then I start to walk off with George, and I'm helping him off stage, and the people, of course, are standing and applauding. And he said, "Hey, kid," he said, "stop and take a bow." He said, "They love that." So I said, "Oh, okay, George." I stopped, and we both bowed, and we walked off.
A tip from the master.
That was it, yeah, and he called me a kid. I was probably 50 at the time.
Wow. Now, were you and Don Rickles friends way back then? Yeah, you guys been knowing each other a long time, right?
Yeah, we're thinking, I think it's like 35 years, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're both still touring, both still performing, and wow, it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. He performs more than I do. I've been kind of limiting my appearances because of a health situation in the family. But I could never see not ever stop doing it, you know, as long as I'm physically able to walk on stage.
And what do you get when you do a show? What does it do for you? We know what the audience gets. They get entertained.
Well, I just turned 80 in September. And so, yeah, I get on a plane, and I'm on the plane, and here are these warriors, you know, the business guys that are going from town to town and trying to sell this or trying to sell that, and I sit and I say, yeah, I'm doing the same thing you guys are doing, you know.
Yeah, it's all about the work, I guess, eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember asking Jay Leno that, and he said, "Well, what else am I going to do? I comed. That's what I do."
Yeah,
because he does. I mean, despite doing a daily talk show, he still performs every weekend. It's just, I guess, it's in your blood, you guys.
Yeah, it's one of those professions. You know, there are some professions people can just leave. You know. And they planned on their retirement and they just leave, and then there are other businesses, and it's in your case broadcasting and television and newspapers and airlines, and that people, they just never leave. They just they love it too much.
Yeah, yeah, we're blessed to like what we do.
You know, it's like you know. Saying that, you know, I'm going to keep working. I just love working in the steel mills. You know, I just love the heat from the furnace, and you know, and the smells, you know, of molten steel. And I couldn't give that up. You know,
turn up the heat. Now, I loved you in Elf as Papa Elf.
Yeah, I loved it.
The movie was so much fun. Did you guys have just as much fun making it?
Oh, we had a great time. Will is so great to work with. I loved the script. And as we were making it, I thought to myself, this is going to be a perennial. This is going to be like Miracle on 34th Street. This is going to be around every year, and I was looking through the TV guide, and there it is. I forget where it's going to be, but one of the cable channels has Elf. The downside to Elf is that you know, sometimes people come back after the show, and they'll say, you know, I brought my son because he loved you in Elf, you know, and then they'll introduce me to, and the kids kind of, how did they do that, you know? You're supposed to be my size. You're not supposed to be your size, you know.
Oh, that's great. And you've had a nice little recurring role on Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
Only one of the hottest.
Two or three. I think we did two or three, yeah.
Yeah. How was that? Now, okay, I got to ask you, this is between you and I. Are the girls really as skinny as they say they are?
Well, I mostly work with Terry, and she is. I fell in love with the whole backstory of Desperate Housewives that Mark Cherry couldn't sell anything for years and years and years, and that Terry was just about to sell her house because she couldn't afford it. They were getting an apartment with her daughter, and along came Desperate Housewives. And the amazing thing about Desperate Housewives is that it was a giant hit immediately. You know, I mean, most shows like All in the Family, it wasn't a hit for the entire year, but people caught on to it in the summer reruns. But it's so rare for a show out of the box to be that successful, you know.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that story about Mark Cherry.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's kind of like, it was kind of like your show, too. I mean, at first it wasn't a success, right? The first one, and then it took off the second time around?
Well, yeah, and especially Newhart. I think the first 2 years we were, I think Larry, Daryl, and Daryl kept us going for 2 years, and then we brought in Julia Duffy and Peter Scolari, and then it began to cook.
Cook it did. Absolutely fabulous. I must give you my regards on losing Suzanne Pleshette. Gosh, we all felt so bad about that.
Such a great lady. Oh, she was so great. She had a mouth on her. I mean, I've seen ex Marine Vietnam vets faint on the stage when Susie would let go.
Wow.
But she was in the, it is politically incorrect, but she was abroad. That's who Susie was. She was abroad, and she reveled in it. She loved it. She just loved it. We did a couple of years ago now. I'll tell you when it was exactly. It was the 35th, it was 2007, because it was the 35th year of the first episode of the Bob Newhart Show. And Susie was sick. She was very sick, and sicker than we thought, because she was telling everybody that, they got it all, and just a little scar. It's probably not more than an inch thick, and they got it all. Well, they hadn't gotten it all, but Susie didn't want people moping around her. So it was day to day, and it was on my birthday in 2007. It was on September 5th, and we all got together, Dick Martin and Marshall Wallace and Bill Daly and Jack Riley and Peter Bonners, and we all got together on stage, and it was touch and go whether Susie was gonna be there or not. She just willed it. She was there. She was in a wheelchair, but she was there. And then in January she died.
Yeah. Wow, strong person, great talent.
Yep.
Absolutely. You won an Emmy Award for your variety show, but never for Newhart. Does that kind of boggle your mind?
I won an Emmy. It's funny. I won an Emmy. I was one of the writers. I won an Emmy nomination for writing on the variety show, the Bob Newhart Show. The Bob Newhart Show won, but it was a producer's award at that time. So the producer, the show won as best comedy show, but the award, the Emmy, went to the producer.
Ah, okay.
So I don't have an Emmy. I don't have an Emmy.
Well, that's amazing. You certainly should have one. Okay, here's a question. Now, I mentioned to my husband last night that I would be speaking to you, and he said, oh, ask him. This is something that's been driving me crazy for years. He says he recalls you being on Penthouse After Dark. There was a sketch that you did, or it was something real, about a psychological test, and they got you in a circle, and you lost it. And he didn't know if you really lost it or if it was just part of the gig.
Well, What was the show?
It was the Penthouse After Dark, which was Hugh Hefner's sort of gathering at his penthouse.
Yeah. I did the driving instructor on this show. But I didn't lose it. I don't remember losing it. I did the driving instructor. I still find it kind of hard to watch because that really was a very raw talent at that time.
And it was
embarrassingly raw.
Really? Well, it was, and the whole show was kind of just so loose. I mean, it was.
Yeah. It was a Playboy penthouse, and there was an elevator, and then it went up to the top, which was the Playboy, which was the penthouse, Playboy's penthouse, and it was black and white, I think.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, well, that was before the album came out, and I was knocking around Chicago, and I think it was $350, and boy, I was glad to get $350 because that got me through another couple months, you know.
Yeah.
Of knocking around.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Button Down Mind, when it came out, it beat Elvis and the Sound of Music soundtrack. That must have been a thrill for you.
Well, it wasn't. I was so new to the business that I didn't realize what a huge award album of the year was. It was in New York. It wasn't televised. I think they started televising maybe a year or two after that. And they just kept calling out my name, and it just kept going up and accepting Grammys. And, you know, with really no understanding of how important an award it was. It beat out Sinatra also, which wasn't. Frank wasn't thrilled about that a comedy album beat out one of his.
Did he send the boys over to talk to you?
Well, I had some broken hands as a result of winning, yeah. Some broken kneecaps, I should say.
So who were some of the comedians who influenced you when you were first starting out?
Well, the obvious one's Jack Benny, George Burns. Jack Benny said a funny thing to me one time. I was appearing at the Crescendo in Hollywood, and Jack came in with Mary and George Burns with Gracie, and they were in the audience. And then afterwards, they came backstage, which was a tiny dressing room in the basement, and they came back, and Jack said to me, he said, "Have you ever seen a comedian named Frank Fay?" And I said, "No, I don't think I have, Jack." And later he had been married to Barbara Stanwyck, and he was apparently a great Broadway performer, a great stand-up, but a terrible man. He had an enormous ego, and extremely bigoted, Jack Benny said, you work very much like him. And I said, "Oh, really?" I said, I don't think I've ever seen him, and I haven't. I keep trying to find things on Frank Fay. And people have told me since that Jack Benny worked very much like Frank Fay. But Frank Fay was reputed to have said to somebody, he's appearing on Broadway, and he said, "And when I lay this line on him, well, they start laughing." And he said, "And I exit the stage, and I go out the stage door, and I go about a half a block to there's this little bar, and I have an extremely dry martini. And I sip the martini, and then I walk back to the stage door and back on stage, and they're still laughing." So that was the ego of Frank Fay.
Wow. Oh, man. And what comedians do you think that you've influenced?
Well, I don't know. I keep hearing, I keep running into young comedians that tell me that I was an influence, which I'm glad, because I was certainly influenced by other comedians. I mean, Ellen DeGeneres, I think, has been fairly open about the fact that she emulated me when she first started out. But we all emulate somebody until we get enough courage to crawl out from behind the facade and actually be ourselves.
Mm. And how did your the phone sketch, how did that first start?
Well, the phone had been around for years and years and years as a comedy device. My understanding is, and I've never been able to verify it, but that one of the first albums, one of the first records ever made with the invention by Edison was a thing called Cohen on the Telephone. And then, of course, Shelley Berman used the telephone, and Mike and Elaine. And George Jessel he was a radio performer. I don't know if you're familiar with George's work, but
Georgie Jessel, yeah.
Georgie Jessel, yeah. And he, at the end of his radio show, he used to pick up the phone. He'd call his mother, and he said, "Mama, this is Georgie from the Money," and then he'd recount what the show was like. And I told his story on Letterman a year or so ago about George Jessel. Toward the end, George was. He had kind of fallen on bad times, so what he would do was he was a great eulogist, and he would do 4 or 5 eulogies a day, you know, and for $50 or whatever they were, $100, whatever they were paying him for a eulogy. And he had this, you know, and he would do that over the course of years, and he was doing a eulogy, and he had this kind of set, you know, this set speech, you know. And here he lies, just a wonderful father, a devoted parent, a great grandfather, taken from us in the prime of life at 97. You know who? And he looked down. And he said, "Oh my God, I know this guy."
Oh man. Georgie Jessel.
Georgie Jessel.
Wow. Wow. So, Bob, when you do a show, what do you hope that the audience will take away? Is it something about the human condition, or what do you?
Yeah, I think it's what a strange world we live in, and we're going to have to laugh to get through it. Especially today, we're going to have to laugh to get through it. And a lot of it is, I don't know about you, but isn't this crazy? And then relate something, and everyone said, yeah, you're right, that is crazy, you know.
Yeah, so we're all in this together.
We're all in the, yeah, we're all... Someone asked me, you know, what about life? And I just said, enjoy the hell out of it. That's the ultimate revenge. Just enjoy the hell out of it.
And have you done that?
Not as much as I should, you know. So I can pass along that advice to other people.
Are you enjoying your life now?
Oh, very much, yeah. Yeah.
That's great. When you're not working, what's your favorite pastime?
The grandkids and my own kids. Used to be golf, but my back kind of bothers me. It goes into spasm. Being with friends, we kind of have a standing, every Tuesday night we get together with Tim Conway and Charlene, Tim's wife, and Mike Connors and Mary Aunt Mary Lou and the Rickles, and just enjoying our friends.
That's great. That's
yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, I read that early on you had studied business management and law. How did you end up from there into comedy?
Well, I did. I had a minor. I think I had a major in accounting, but my degree was in management. And then I went on to law school for about a year and a half, and I flunked out of law school. And I was thinking just this morning, you know, what a blessing that was that I flunked out, because now instead of being a lawyer and hearing jokes about lawyers, I'm telling jokes about lawyers, you know. So everything worked out. You know, if you look back on your life and you say, wow, it just, boy, were you lucky.
And you feel lucky.
Yeah, I feel very lucky that I was there at the right time, and it'll be 50 years in the February next year, which that's when I recorded the album, the first album.
Wow, fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow, 5 decades of making people happy. That's pretty nice.
You're right. That's exactly what it is. It's five decades of making people laugh, yeah. And I know I have this feeling, it's my own theory, but I have a feeling that when the time comes and you go up to the pearly gates and they say, God says, what did you do? And you say, I made people laugh. And hopefully God will say, yeah, get in that short line over there.
You deserve to be in that short line. Bob, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lovely chatting to you.
Thank you, Gloria.
Could I impose upon you to do a station ID for us before you go?
Yeah.
It's a bit long. I don't know if you have a pencil.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, I'm Bob Newhart, and you're listening.
Let me get that part. Hi, I'm Bob Newhart. Okay.
And you're listening to?
You're listening to?
Toronto's number one all news.
L?
All news.
L news.
Radio.
What is L news?
All. A-L-L, all news.
All news?
All news.
Oh, I thought you said L news. I couldn't figure out what L news was.
News. That's our Spanish station. No. All news radio station.
Radio station.
680 news.
680 news. Okay.
Okay, and I'm rolling as anytime you're ready, sir.
Okay. Hi, this is Bob Newhart. You're listening to Toronto's number one all news radio station, 680 news.
Okay, that was pretty good. Can we do one more just for safety?
Sure.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Bob Newhart. You're listening to Toronto's number one all-news radio station, 680 News.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And enjoy the good weather, and we'll keep it warm for you up here, too.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.